response to some things that were said, I wanted to say as follows. There is a group of individuals out there in the world, not a very large group, but I can't tell you their number, who call themselves, or at least I refer to them, as Rambamisti, which is to say that they unequivocally, without exception, and dogmatically accept the Rambam's halachic position on whatever topic may be under discussion, and furthermore, they claim that everyone is required to do so. And this position, that the Rambam is the only posek that one should refer to and whose opinion one should take into account, that this position is somehow logically or philosophically mandated. I've never accepted this position. As I wrote to someone recently, it is true, I believe, as an approximation, that 85% of the things, of the halachic positions that I express, are identical to the positions of the Rambam. But that is not because I'm a Rambamist. And if I were, then it wouldn't be 85%, it would be 100%. It's because an in-depth and objective analysis of all the sources lead to that conclusion. And where I feel that the Rambam's position is not reasonable or is not as convincing as other positions, as the halachic views of other great halachic authorities. If I feel, for example, that the Rambam's position does not fit the primary sources of Chazal very well, or doesn't fit at all, which is rare, I admit, but it happens, then I will choose from all the available sources and authorities and commentaries, I will choose another position, not based on expedience or any other foreign consideration, but based entirely on a truthful and honest attempt to understand the texts and the true intent of the Chachamim in the different sources that we have. In fact, Elia, could you pass me Tosefta Kifshuta Masechet Berachot behind you? Me'achorecha, ken, aset ha'kachol hazeh. Berachot, ken. Olai zeh sheni sham. Ken. Ani rotzeh letzatet mashehu misham. I just remembered it's probably worthwhile at this point to quote from the Mavor, the preface, introduction of Hagaon Harav Shaul Lieberman Zal, the author of Tosefta Kifshuta, which is a monumental work on the Tosefta, written by one of the most monumental scholars of Torah Sheba'al Peh and Torah in general for many generations. Those who know are familiar with it and know, and those who do not should make it their business to find out. At any rate, in his commentaries, Perush on the Tosefta, the volume on Masechet Berachot, which is the first of the volumes of the commentary, because there are separate volumes for the text of the Tosefta itself, on Amud Kaf Beth, page 22, the last page of the Mavo, after he explains how he approached this monumental task of understanding and explaining the Tosefta, and discuss the earlier Mefarshim on the Tosefta. He writes as follows: Harov ha-machriya shel ha-perushim ha-mesuyim b'sefer zeh, the vast majority of perushim that you will find in my book here, eno miyusad lo al nushaot v'hagahot, is not based on discovering the correct nusach or correcting the nusach, being magia the nusach, which of course he also did where necessary. And Rav Lieberman, as opposed to earlier Mefarshim, had many important medieval manuscripts before him, some of the very early manuscripts. But he says, the majority of what I have to say is not based on that. Ella, where of course that is the... That itself is the answer to the riddle, so to speak. By discovering the correct nusach, everything becomes clear. Well, you don't need to say anything beyond that. Especially if you can demonstrate quite cogently that this is the correct nusach. But that's only a minority of cases. The majority of cases is not based on that. He says the majority is based ela al habasis shekav'u rabotenu zal harishonim u'aharonim. In other words, Rabbanan is saying that this was the position, this was the approach of all the great Chachamim in Am Yisrael from time immemorial and down to the present, Rishonim and Aharonim. Wahainu, and that is, Hith Amsuth Wahishtadluth Lahavi Ha'inyan Mitoch HaSefer Asmo, to try earnestly and seriously to understand the matter under discussion from the texts themselves as they are, as they present themselves, not through the lens of someone else's commentary necessarily, or even not necessarily through the lens of, shall we say, the Talmud Bavli. Trying to understand the Tosefta in terms of the Talmud Bavli can't always work, simply because sometimes they're speaking across purposes, sometimes they're simply not on the same page. Sometimes, for example, we find quite explicitly in the Talmud Bavli that they ponder a certain question. They ask themselves, what would the halacha be in such and such a case, for example, and they're not sure about the answer, and they discuss it. Is it maybe this way? Is it that way? And the answer to that question, or at least that very same question, was discussed, and a decision was given in the Tosefta explicitly. But the Amoraim and Abavel do not always see the Tosefta that we have before us. They're just by way of explaining that it is a great mistake to impose the Talmud Bavli, shall we say, on the Tefta. Ha'it amsuth v'ishtadluth lahavinet ha'inyan mitoch ha-sefer asmo mitoch sha'ar sifrei hazal, based on the text before you and based on other texts of Zal which pertain to that matter. That is the essential, and that all great Chachamim have always adopted, whether it was Rashi or the Rambam, whether it was this Gaon or that Gaon, or this Aharon or that Aharon. They all essentially agreed that what we are trying to do is understand the matter at hand of the sources before us. So I mention this by way of explaining that is my approach. The same approach here mentioned by Rav Lieberman, Zal, this is my approach. And there's nothing new in this approach. This has been the approach of all Chachmei Yisrael. Every single one of the Rishonim worked in that fashion. I'm not aware of any Rishon who worked differently. Amongst the Ahronim, frankly, or to be precise, I would say that there were Ahurim who worked that way, and there were Ahurim who worked in another fashion. In other words, some of the Ahronim accepted as as axiomatic that the Shulchan Aruch, for example, or the Haber, or the Rama, depending on which part of the world one came from, their psak was binding, and their discussion began from that point onwards. There were certainly many Ahronim who did adopt that position. There are also many Ahronim who did not. That is precisely perhaps what distinguishes my approach from that of certain other Rabbanim that one might mention today. Because those amongst the Ahronim, you will find these two schools of thought. That's a fact. Amongst the Rishonim, you will not. Amongst the Rishonim, all the Rishonim were trying to understand the sources of Chazal. It is true that all the Rishonim essentially accepted as axiomatic the proposition that the Talmud Bavli is binding and its word is final. Why they felt that way, or why they were taught to think that way, or to accept that position, that's another discussion, a long discussion itself, which we've had before, we'll have again, but not now. Even having said that, we see, not infrequently, that different Rishonim, sometimes the Rambam, sometimes the Baalei Tosafot, sometimes other well-known Chachamim, deviated from that principle. But again, that's a separate discussion. So I return to the question of Rambamistim. This notion that there is only one halachic source book or code that one should follow, and that anyone who is not following only that code is reprehensible in some way, this is an entirely newfangled position. To the best of my knowledge, it was never suggested, was enunciated in that way in any time in history, I think, until the present. It is true that amongst all the communities on earth, the Temanim, the Jews of Teman of Yemen, during the Rambam's own lifetime, apparently, took upon themselves, of their own free volition, to follow the Rambam's halachic teachings and other teachings as well. And this remained the case in Teman for a number of centuries, something like 5 centuries or even a bit longer. And that position eventually was eroded and essentially ceased to exist by way of an evolutionary process that began at least 300 years ago when other printed books began to arrive in Teman. And that also is a separate discussion. To the point that today you have to go out of your way to find a Temani who really follows only the Rambam's opinion. If it was once the rule, today it's the exception, and even a rare exception. And even the Temanim never claimed, to the best of my knowledge, that this is what all Jews must do, and this is the only reasonable position to adopt. Rather, they chose, of their own volition, to follow the Rambam, to choose, make him their posek. They decided to, we have the Mishnah which says, Aseh Lecha Rav, and they decided to make the Rambam their Rav, just as at least some of the communities in Spain, in Sfarad, during the lifetime of the Rosh and others after his lifetime, in the lifetime of his sons, we find in a Teshuvah written, if I'm not mistaken, as I recall, a question written to one of his sons, Ben Yehuda Ben HaRosh. He's asked by some communities of Jews in Spain whether we can decide to accept upon ourselves the Rosh as our posek in all matters. So that kind of a voluntary decision, Aseh Lecha Rav, to choose a Rav and to follow him, that's perfectly legitimate. But to claim that the only legitimate and only reasonable position or decision is to do so and choose the Rambam only, That is an unreasonable position. And I don't think I've ever heard any rational, cogent why that would be a correct approach. I don't think it's an unreasonable approach for a person to say, I choose to follow the Rambam, just as it's not unreasonable for a person to say, I choose to follow the Rosh, for example. But there is no imperative that it be so. There is a further problem with this approach. Which is associated with this Rambamist philosophy, in my view, and that is that it tends to create a kind of, for want of a better term, Karaite halachic system. That is to say, an halachic system, as it were, which is not really a system. An halachic framework, if it's a better term, that denies one of the essential qualities of the Trasha Baal Peh, and that is it's not only its ability but it's the necessity of the Torah, the Halakha, as considered and as decided by Chachamim in different generations, the essential nature of Halakha to not to adapt to the spirit of the times, but to be in step with reality, to be relevant to the reality in which we live, and not to pretend that we're living in some earlier century or some earlier time when, or earlier millennium, where things were very different. In other words, just by way of example, the concept of Hasibah on Lela Seder, which is Mefurash in the Mishnah in Arve Pesachim. When the Chachamim made Haseba, what people erroneously refer to nowadays as leaning to the left, which is in fact nothing to do with Haseba, that concept at that time, 2,000 years ago, even before that, was the normative and common practice amongst all, certainly amongst the wealthy and even amongst the middle classes, essentially all but the poor, perhaps, not just amongst the Jewish people, but amongst all the peoples living around the Mediterranean, or even further afield. In other words, the Persians ate their meals in such a way, which involved not sitting at tables and chairs as we have today, which is a later European invention, but rather reclining or semi-reclining to the left, yes, but semi-reclining on couches, divans, cushions, and the like, on the floor or low cushions and low couches, to low divans on near the floor, and eating off trays, and a different arrangement altogether to what we have today. That was practiced by the Persians and the Greeks and the Romans and the Jews, yes, of course, and many other nations. In that reality, in that historical context, Haseba had a meaning, had a purpose. It signified something. In other words, any person of any standing at all ate his meal, certainly a festive meal, not a snack that he was grabbing because he was running off to do something urgent. Any important person eating any kind of an important meal ate only in that fashion, called Haseba, which is why Lela Seder, which is a very important meal, perhaps the most meal in the Jewish calendar, Hachamim insisted that every Jew act as if he's a very important person, which of course he is, even if it doesn't always seem that way, on this particular night, and make sure that you adopt this practice, even if you don't always do it because you don't normally have the wherewithal. Adopt this practice of Haseba. For many Jews, you didn't need to adopt the practice, you did it every day, or you did it certainly most of the time. Certainly on Shabbat and Yom Tov you did it. But for some people, poor people for example, who didn't have the right kinds of cushions or couches or what have you, they may have to borrow, they may have to be given tzedakah, etc., in order to do this. That's why the Mishnah mentions it. However, in a reality, in a context where no one eats in this fashion called Haseba. Not kings or queens or presidents or prime ministers or anybody at all. In fact, the suggestion to any such person today that he should lie down on a mattress on the floor and to eat his meal, as certain Rav Mistim I know do, they take their sometimes very expensive dining room table and chairs and push them into a corner and then put mattresses on what have you on the floor and have Leila Seder in that fashion because they think they're performing the mitzvah of Haseba. In our historical reality, present day context, and this is not just true today, it's been true for at least 1,000 years, certainly in the West, as is proved by the fact that several major Rishonim in the Western world, in Ashkenaz, already raised this issue at least 900 years ago and said in so many words that Haseba is no longer relevant. This concept doesn't exist. You can, even if you insist on doing it, you're not achieving anything. In fact, you're doing the opposite. You're making yourself look like a poor person by sitting on the floor on a mattress rather than sitting on your expensive dining room chair at your expensive dining room table. This kind of stubborn and obstinate insistence upon a very literalistic understanding of Shabbat Pei, whereby that which is written no matter when it was written, for what reason it was written, what the rationale, the logic behind it might be, and no matter whether circumstances and realities have changed, which any normal person understands should have, at least potentially, have an impact on the halachic practice that we adopt. This kind of insistence is essentially denying the true nature of Torah Sheba'al Peh, and that's why I refer to it as a kind of carried halachic system. And I have nothing at all to do with any such a way of thinking. I never have, and I never will. So, if there are certain people out there, and there are, who claim that I am a Rambamist for whatever reason, I can't imagine, but I'm aware that some people out there are saying these things on some forums and certain places on the internet, then I'm stating here for the record, this is not so, and never was so. It's also equally untrue, for entirely different reasons, of course, that I have anything to do with any kind of Karaite approach. Nothing could be further from the truth. I believe that any form, any strain of Karaite Judaism that exists today, and there isn't that much, to be honest, in the way of Karaite Judaism or Judaism today in the world, despite the fact that some of them are quite vocal at the present time, but again, on certain internet forums and what have you, but the fact is they're very few and far between, and they have very little or nothing of value to offer. Karaite Judaism has always been an extremely simplistic and childish system, which by definition can lead to nothing, and never has actually led to very much, and therefore the verdict of history, well, that it disappear, as essentially it did, almost entirely, it was inevitable. And I hope that what I've just said has clarified my position.